Hello. You're listening to Voice of Vashon, KVSH LP 101.9 in Vashon, Washington. Welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. I hope you can pull up a chair, pour yourself a cuppa, and listen as we tell some stories and share some experiences of the many ways food affects us every day. Today, my guest is Maria Marcy. Maria is a 22-year resident of Vashon, and she hails from Russia. Hello, Maria.
Hello.
I'm so glad you came to see us today.
Me too. Thank you for having.
Yes, you're welcome. So, Maria, let's talk a little bit about where you came from. Let's get centered around that and what that was like.
I was born and grew up in the city of Nizhny Tagil, which is...
Say the name again, please.
Nizhny Tagil.
Oh, Nizhny Tagil. I love that.
And that it is situated in the central Ural Mountains. It's a pretty busy industrial city with all the pollution. But it was wonderful growing up with a community around. We grew up, I grew up in an apartment building, and we spent a lot of time making food with neighbors, having parties, making a wonderful time together.
And so you learned early about mingling in the community and cooking together and having
fun that way.
Yes. And also, isn't that area quite agricultural, or is that farther south from where you are?
We have farming, and there's so much going on there.
Well, I have never been there, but I do know that the Ural Mountains separate Asia from Europe.
Yes, and
so we can get a glimpse in our minds of where we're talking about. And you're in the central region, so you were very close to some of the other countries from whom you learned cuisine.
Well, there's a lot of influence from
Ukraine,
all the republics that were part of Soviet Union. Some of their traditional recipes became so popular that they're now traditional Russian recipes.
Right.
Like plov, pelmeni, which is traditionally comes from Asia,
any kind of
dumplings, many countries have their own personal dumpling stories.
Right.
But it became so popular that most Russians don't even know that it's not our tradition.
Well, I didn't know it wasn't your tradition, but it makes sense that it came from Asia. Sure. And then earlier when we were talking the other day, you mentioned Dacha.
Which is a summer garden, very popular place for a lot of Russians. It's where best food comes from in the summertime. It's where you get enough food so you could preserve for cold winter nights.
Yeah, which you have a few there.
Oh, yeah.
So was it like a community garden kind of thing? Is that...
Not necessarily. They're private gardens, but there's a lot of minglement and a lot of...
But I guess my question is, so if you're living in an apartment and you have this plot of land, it's not nearby, right?
It depends.
You take a car to get
to it. In my case, we had to.
And that's where your garden is, and maybe a little cottage, little shelter, little bathroom or something there, and you went to garden.
Banya.
Okay.
Bathhouse.
Yeah. And so your cooking reflects your love of international cuisine, and you told me that you love fusion.
Yes, I do.
I also know that you love Russian. What are your favorite cuisines to cook?
I love Thai. I love Indian. There's so many. I love Chinese.
I like the story.
Georgian. I love Georgian. Oh, I love Central Asian cuisine.
Yeah. Central Asian is fabulous. I remember you said that when you first moved here from Russia, you didn't know a lot about cooking. And then you knew some because you had Babushka.
Yeah.
But when you got to America, you were really happy with all the books and the fresh produce and the things that were available in our melting pot. But I think your melting pot is really interesting too, because we talked about Peter the Great,
okay,
for instance. How has he affected food?
Well, for, first
for
of all,
thing.
The main thing is he brought potatoes. And that actually a relatively new addition. It's only been a little over 300 years. And it's hard to imagine that for a Russian, where it's such a staple in our traditional cuisine.
I was really surprised to hear that, because you just think potatoes and vodka in Russia, and you just think it's been there forever, but they weren't. And I understand.
I don't know about vodka.
Well, vodka was. I'm sorry, potatoes, meaning the potatoes weren't always there. And then, do you make vodka from potatoes?
You can.
But is it made mostly from rye?
Rye or wheat.
Or wheat, yeah. Well, I know that when Peter the Great came with the potatoes, he also came with some ideas about how Russians should behave, because he'd been very influenced by European style and European
That's
food.
True.
And he demanded that all the noblemen shave.
Yes.
And was even known that to shave some himself, if they didn't look very nice. And then... So potatoes have been a staple, really, even through the 80s when, what was it, the Soviet Union?
During the hard times.
Right, during the hard times, there were always potatoes.
That was our saving grace,
yes.
Because at the time, I remember I was in my teenage years, mm-hmm. and we were given coupons. We had to stay in huge lines, and there was not a lot available in terms of products that, mm-hmm. that we could mm-hmm. choose from. Just for example, like I told you, a family of three, in my case, could only get 1 kilo of butter per month.
For the month.
For the month. So 2 pounds of
wow.
butter for 1 month for a family
month.
Of three.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was a lot of buckwheat, pasta, breads, a lot of pickled stuff that we did ourselves, preserves.
Sure.
Sauerkraut. Russians are really big on sauerkraut.
You could only go once a month with your coupons?
Well, it depends. You can go twice a month, but you only get that amount.
Okay,
per month.
So they're keeping track.
Yeah, yeah. You actually have to clip the coupons and give it to them.
Okay. And so, how have things improved?
Oh well, modern cuisine is so much different. All the influence that the world, mm-hmm. the global influence mm-hmm. In cuisine is obvious. And interesting trends that I'm noticing a lot more. The vegetarianism is growing. The
is
trend,
it?
Yeah. The people are starting to think more consciously about what they eat mm-hmm. and how it's cooked, and just the diversity of things that we can make food of has
right.
improved tremendously.
I'm so glad to know that. That's a happy thing.
Oh yeah, and internet and social media mm-hmm. and there's so much going on in cuisine and cook webs.
Yeah, there is. Let's talk a little bit. Let's go away from the international stuff and let's get back to Russia and let's talk about stroganoff.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, everybody thinks about stroganoff.
Yes.
Russian.
It's an interesting story that I just recently read about mm-hmm. it. I was too. I always thought of it as a traditional Russian recipe. But it turns out that it was developed by a French cook named Charles.
Yeah, I can't say his name either. Yeah.
Charles Bruyère. And he won a cooking contest in St. Petersburg in 1891. And he named his dish after, you know, this wealthy family, very well-known family. But it has nothing to do with Count Stroganov personally.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Oh, I thought it did.
He just thought it was a cool name. And originally
cool name.
It was just thinly sliced steak with some mustard dressing. and served on a bowl in, on top of mashed potatoes usually. And in 1920s, the recipe became so popular in Asia. Those are the ones who added the noodles.
They did, yeah, of course.
And the Russians added sour cream and mushrooms.
Where, mushrooms, always mushrooms.
Of course.
Russia. Yes, that's true.
That's a huge activity in the summertime in Russia, going foraging for mushrooms and berries.
Did you do that when you
lived
there?
Oh, I love it.
Oh, I bet. Do you do it here?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's fabulous. There, it's a wealth of mushrooms
on the island. We love Vashon for that. Yeah.
I bet you do. So, when you're talking about some of these dishes, you know, the borscht, that, oh, let's talk about borscht. We didn't talk about that yet.
Okay.
Tell me how to pronounce it.
Borscht.
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 There's no T at
no
the end.
I've always said the T. Yeah.
I was always curious why it came from.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you were telling me that borscht has its own flavor and is made many different ways according to many different families.
Over 100 recipes recorded, mm-hmm. And every region, every family makes it different, like every cook.
So like spaghetti sauce in Italy,
yes,
or the gravy,
yes,
and all of those are different.
Everybody adds its own. Mm-hmm. And even when I cook borscht myself, sometimes it turns out different, you know.
And
but usually good.
But usually good. I've heard it's good. I know somebody who's eaten it before.
Thank you.
And I know that in Russia, feasting is really loved.
Big part of the culture.
To sit at the table and have some drinks and have camaraderie and laugh and have good food.
Yes.
And your biggest feast of the year is?
Mostly New Year's is the most beloved holiday where a celebration of that sort is happening. And it's a long process. You cook together, people bring more food, and you have many courses. The table, just like on this, the picture of the cookbook I brought.
Yes, yes. And I see it's fish and it's meat.
Oh,
and
it's everything. Zakuski, appetizers, which is... smoked herring, pickled mushrooms, you know, little sausages, you name it, caviar.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And did you, do you start cooking for that a couple days ahead of time, or does everybody just come together and cook at one time?
Mm, it depends on the family and how big you planning your feast to be.
Mm-hmm. You were saying that Americans tend to get a little overwhelmed on New Year's Eve in Russia.
Yes, especially if you don't know that three more courses are following.
Plus a little more vodka.
Yep.
Yeah. You mentioned cabbage. Well, actually, we talked about sauerkraut a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that cabbage is a staple and was a staple
one of the
in
oldest,
old Russia.
One of the oldest recorded staples, which dates about 6,000 years. And the sauerkraut was absolutely one of the first things that came with it. And I remember even from my personal experience, spending my summer times with my grandparents, they would have a huge wooden barrel that would last a whole winter.
Wow.
You just go scoop a little bit and then it's all good.
Well, you know, the Russians had a lead on how fermentation gives you a healthy belly.
Very much
which,
so.
You know, right now is a big movement in
very
America.
Very much so.
But there's always pickles and there's always fermented foods.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the recipes I read was a fermented beef. And you just let it sit for days in this brine, and then you roast it.
Uh-huh.
Which is a recipe that came from Catherine the Great. But her pastry was only flour and water, so I think that was probably pretty crunchy pastry. Probably wasn't very good. Do you have a favorite dish that you like to cook, Russian?
I have many, but since I was thinking about, since your program is called Stirring the Pot, I have a pot dish.
And tell me about that. What's it called?
It's called Hunter's Style Stew.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of it that it's very simple and it doesn't take long preparation. It's just basically baking time. But it's usually cooked and served in small glazed clay pots.
So you mean like individual pots?
Individual pots.
I see you brought one. I love it. It's
gorgeous. They can come with handles or without.
Or without.
Different sizes. Mm-hmm. But I love it for the ease of is and also entertaining element
of it. It's special if you have your own little pot at the table. Yeah. So tell me, if you have this little pot, what are you going to put in it?
So you can make it vegetarian and you can make it with meat. If I make it with meat, so I would start with a little dollop of butter on in the pot, and then it's just a layering of all the ingredients, which would be a little bit of potatoes, a layer of potatoes, cut up potatoes, a layer of chopped onion. If you use the meat, that would be your choice of meat, chicken or whatever you...
So no special cut or no, just whatever you have on hand.
What you prefer. Mm-hmm. And then I usually put mushrooms. That's what makes That's what makes it hunter style. Mm-hmm. And you can add, if you do cheese, you can add a little bit of cheese. And for the dressing, for kind of a sauce that you pour over all of that, you would need some sour cream, a little splash of white wine, salt and pepper, and you're good to go. You just...
So am I mixing up the sour cream and the white wine and then pouring it on top of it?
Yep.
And then you
cover it up and bake.
How long do you bake it?
It depends on the temperature. I would give it 45 minutes to an hour, and especially like if you're cooking with meat.
Right. Well, another thing that I'm afraid we're going to run out of time here, but another thing I want to talk with you about are these cookbooks that you brought with you, because they're amazing.
Well, thank you.
And I'd like to hear the story about the big fat one that you brought. Tell me about it. For my listeners, I should say it's a large book. It's black on the outside, and it's probably 500 or 600 pages. The binding is a little tattered because it's old and it's very precious, and it's written in Russian.
In 1911. It's
so
one of my heirlooms that I received after my friend of that time, Marie Arnott. Some of the Vashonites may remember her. So that was gifted to me after she left it for me.
What a wonderful gift that is.
That is.
And we're going to be back in just a second. Right now, I want to give my sponsors a thank you. If I can find my little thing, here it is. Sorry. Frog Song Gardens by Urban Feast. Voice of Vashon programming with support from Frog Song Garden by... With support from Vashon Spectacular Guardian. I'm sorry, I'm having a terrible time here. Hello? Okay, thank you. Voice of Vashon programming with support from Frog Song Garden by Urban Feast welcomes Vashon Spectacular Garden wedding venue and caterer. Find them on the web under the venue tab at urbanfeast.com. You're listening to Voice of Vashon in Vashon, Washington. KVSH LP 101.9. I'm Linda Nygaard, and we're talking with Maria Marcy here on Stirring the Pot. Okay, thank you. And I'm sorry for that flub up. I was thinking about 10 other things. Anyway, I want to continue our conversation about the cookbooks, because what you were saying about the big one that was written in 1911 is that some of the Russian is hard for you to understand.
It is, because it's been changed after the revolution. It's still old Slavonic, and the grammar is very different. The spelling is different, so it takes a little bit of effort to understand. But it's phenomenal just to see what was being cooked, and some of those methods are just
like. Can you think of one? I mean, is there something that just amazed you in the book?
Oh, so much. Some fantastic cabbage rolls with the things that they would add, like smoked turkey from all this fancy stuff that we probably don't even have anymore.
They don't even think about
all the kinds of different fish, and just that alone is. It probably takes about 100 pages just for fish recipes.
I bet it did. Now, so looking back at that time of the world and looking now, well, we went through the revolution and through the Soviets, and now has the economy changed enough to help the food world levitate a little bit? Is it coming better now?
I would think so. I see that. Yeah. A lot more people can afford a lot more.
Okay.
Better quality things.
Good. Yeah.
More variety of it. So yeah, I would say so.
And have you been back recently?
Not too recently, but 3.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to go back.
Yeah.
I miss it.
Well, I hope you go soon.
Thank you.
And I want to talk also about the other cookbook you brought.
Okay.
And why it's important to you.
Well, it's another heirloom because mm-hmm. it's probably out of print as well. It's a 1977 cookbook of Soviet Union cuisine. And it has recipes from all 15 republics that were part of Soviet Union originally.
Oh.
And so it's a nice little comeback to for me sometimes if I crave some national, like Georgian food. That's a good place for me.
So of the Georgian dishes that you love, what do you love to cook?
Satsivi, which is chicken with walnut and pomegranate sauce.
Oh,
doesn't it sound good?
Yeah. Tell me about it. How do you cook it?
I would have to,
Look at the recipe.
Yeah, it's been a while. But basically, those are the main ingredients. Garlic, shallots, chicken, walnuts, mm-hmm. mixed with pomegranate.
Oh, that just sounds fabulous. What's your... what do you yearn for your next meal? What if you could, in a perfect world, have your perfect meal right now, what would it be?
Well, right now I have a pot of borscht on the stove.
Do you? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Well.
And I love cooking mine. If it's a meat version, I love cooking it both vegetarian mm-hmm. style and meat. But this time around, it's going to be oxtail broth.
Oh, that sounds really good.
That's my favorite.
Oh, wow. Tell me about that one.
Oh, it's a you cook your borscht like you normally would.
Uh-huh.
Some people add kidney beans. Some people don't add potatoes or don't add carrots. Like I said, the variations are so plentiful. But you start with I usually start with stock of shelled onions. We've shelled onions.
Oh,
shell
sure,
peels.
Sure.
And that was one of the things I took out from Joe Robinson's book, one
okay.
of my favorite.
Oh, yeah, she has a good
Eating
book.
On the Wild Side. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read it, I recommend it. If you have, reread it. There's so much information.
Joe Robinson, are you listening?
I use those peels to make the initial broth. And then you add meat or no meat, and then...
Oh, it just sounds fabulous. Well, you told me about a way to make real color happen in the borscht.
Yes, that's a little secret.
It's a little secret.
I am ready to.
Are you ready to share it?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
So you grate this medium carrot. You put a little bit of vinegar, just a little sprinkle, and then you pour hot water or stock that you're using and let it sit for 20 minutes to 30 minutes.
You mean beet? You said carrot.
Yes,
yeah.
You soak that beet in, mm-hmm. but vinegar makes it really red pop out. And then you add it at the end and quick zap, and it's ready.
So,
and you usually serve it with a dollop of sour cream, some dill, parsley, mm-hmm. green onions.
So before you do that at the last minute, right?
Yeah.
The shredding and and the vinegar. Because before that, you also have beets in there.
Yeah, you
in
have,
there.
You so
but
take,
it's more like a stew color.
It just, it helps to bring out the red
mm-hmm.
in
yeah.
the soup.
Yeah, I read a little article about why Russians love sour cream so much, and it was because dairy has always been very big in Russia.
And it's really good.
And it's really
good. Still really good.
I'm sure it is. And that, you know, barrels of it used to just sit around till it got sour.
Yes.
And then it was a joy.
That's not my favorite.
No, that's not. It's different. But they use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do. And so let's see. Let's... what's always in your fridge?
Oh,
what do you always have in your fridge?
My staples in the pantry
mm-hmm.
and fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Buckwheat, pearl barley, rice, potatoes,
oh, yes.
cabbage, sauerkraut, carrots, onions, garlic, shallots, beets.
And do you have, what's your
horseradish.
Favorite? Oh, let's talk horseradish. About horseradish.
It's so easy to make the very quick horseradish recipe. Grate, if horseradish is soft enough, you can grate it or chop it in a chopper. Add fresh heirloom tomato. I prefer the good flavorful ones. Mm-hmm. And a few cloves of garlic, and then you mix it all together, and here's your horseradish.
And there's your horseradish sauce. Do you put it on lots of stuff?
Oh, you can put it on pelmeni, anything you want, over potatoes, whatever you think of. I had
a great aunt one time who loved horseradish and mustard on her pancakes in the morning.
Ooh.
She was a tough old nut, that one. So tell us about vodka. How big of a role does vodka play, really?
Well, vodka, like you said, when you think about Russia, borscht, vodka, bread, herring.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I don't know the history when it started.
I have to look it up.
But it's of course it's huge. There's so many varieties, and wow.
Well, we were talking earlier about horseradish vodka.
Yes, you can easily make it yourself just by putting a piece of horseradish root. Just don't make it too big, and don't wait too long, otherwise it'll be pretty potent.
It'll knock your head off is what'll happen. Yeah. And so do you have any memories of what your grandma used to cook? Baba used to cook for you? I do,
because they lived in Altai Mountains, and they had a huge, the heart of the house was the Russian fireplace
that would
be serving as a heating element and, of course, cooking.
And cooking, too.
And she was an excellent bread baker, and whenever she would start her bread baking, it would smell divine. And
I've read so many recipes about bread, Russian bread, and there's so many different kinds, savory or sweet or whatever you want to do. I read one this morning.
Indeed.
that has meat inside the rolls.
I don't know what it was called, but it's called pirozhok. But pierogi is
like pierogi.
They refer to a different dumpling style, but this one
is
baked.
Bread.
Yeah, it's
real bread.
Basically, you stuff it with many things and whatever you want, pretty much, and bake it.
I know. I think also basic spices in Russian cuisine are what?
Dill, parsley, bay leaf, salt and pepper, and...
Is caraway big, or is that more Scandinavian?
It's used, but it's not as popular. Mm-hmm. Cilantro, coriander,
cloves.
Cloves, yes. Yeah. All the pickling things.
Because pickling, that's what we like to do.
We do.
Yeah. So also Russian tea, you know, we talk about tea a lot and we all drink tea. Russian tea is a national drink as well. I mean, Russians
very much so.
Love their tea.
And remember those big copper samovars.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a big heart of a traditional tea ceremony.
Are you a tea drinker too?
I used to drink more of it growing up, but I'm now more of a herbal tea.
Yeah. Well, I understand that tea is kind of a special time in someone's home. And if you show up and have tea, there's always something wonderful to eat with it, right?
Cookies, jam, blini, stuffed with the yummy jam, and what else do you use? There's, so many things. Mm. Some bakers love to give you a piece of cake with your tea.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also it's kind of rude to refuse it. They say that this little article I read said that if you refuse the goodies with the tea,
just like with vodka,
it's like
you're not my comrade,
you're not my friend, my comrade. That's great, but it's slightly rude. It's considered slightly rude to drink your tea naked, is what they say.
I never heard of that.
Well, no, I don't mean naked in your body. I'm sorry. I mean, like, you know, ice cream can be naked if it doesn't have a topping on it.
I got it.
This is like tea that's naked because you should eat something with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's usually served with sugar and milk.
Right. And that's the other naked. Black is not. Well, with that, I have to tell you, we're running out of time. I'm so sorry. Will you come back and visit with us again?
I'd love to.
I'd love to have you back. So I thank all of you out there for joining me, and I hope you got a laugh or two at my expense. That's fine. Thank you, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Thank you so much, Maria.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you came.
I really had a fun time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Things and stones alone.